cards with a 6-9 swing, man. You can shoot the 3.
Urban Meyer, a liar. Don't believe a word he said.
Look at you go. Look at that. It's like seeing a kid ride a bike.
And I'm going to law school, baby. It all starts here.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Friday, September 4th, 2009. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and joining me today, our Alligator Sports editor, Phil Kegler.
Yo, 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 happy to be here. Weekend's here.
Kyle Maestri.
I'm trying to do better than Oregon.
And Mike McCullough.
Hi.
Bringing the thunder at the reintro. All right, we got a lot to talk about. This is the one everybody's been waiting for, the Florida preview, season preview. We're also going to talk about the Charleston Southern game, what little there is to talk about up here at the front of the show. Let's dive right into it. Let's talk about the Charleston Southern game. What is there to expect? What do you guys think of this ridiculous 63-point spread that's going on here? Let's start with McCall.
I would take Charleston Southern in it. Looking back into Florida's history, the last time they beat someone by that much was 1997. They beat Central Michigan 82-6. They played plenty of joke teams since then, if you follow their non-conference schedule. And it never really gets that bad. Urban Meyer seems to be pretty good about calling off the dogs. Except for, I guess, the Kentucky game last year, maybe, under the orange, actually. So I don't know. I don't expect to see them win by that much. I think they have an obligation to leave at least Tebow on the field for at least the first half and get some touchdowns to boost up those Heisman numbers. You need the numbers at the end of the year. So I'd expect to see him play a lot, but I don't think they get to that number.
Well, Phil, you made the guarantee on a last week's show that Tebow would play, what, one series into the second quarter and be done?
Yeah, I mean, Mike makes a good argument, though. I wasn't thinking Heisman campaign, you know, for the season over. And, like, fans, you know, fans can't get enough Tebow. But I just think for, like, how important he is to the team, there's just no reason to play more than one or two series in the second quarter.
All right, and what do we expect out of Florida in this game? What's, you know,
one more thing on the spread. Oh. I just want to say my philosophy on the spread is that not the offense, but the lines that you would be betting on if you choose to do that. Good teams tend to cover the spread no matter how ridiculous they are if they're a really good team. By really good, I mean like national championship caliber. So, I mean, it's really tough. They probably won't cover one spread, I think, this year if I had to like pick a number right now. But it's hard to say which one they won't cover because they'll have a few ridiculous ones. So, I don't know. I would go over. You know, I would pick them to cover every single spread, and you might lose one time, I would say, this whole year.
I think that with this team being one of the most hyped that we've seen in a long time, especially with the votes they got in the first place poll, I mean, these spreads are made to entice betting, and they're playing off the perception of Florida pretty heavily, I think, with the 63-point spread.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think we've seen, like, the ridiculousness as, like, some – but he initially reported that it was going to be 73 points, which is not true. But, I mean, I think aside from this game, they're not going to be too ridiculous because even as hyped as Florida is, like, they're not going to put up a 30-point spread in an SEC game or something.
Right. They're going to be probably no more than, like, 28 or so, I'd say, like, 4 touchdowns against anyone. But even, like, the FIU spread should also be ridiculous,
yeah,
I would think,
true.
Down the road. And I'd say they may not cover one of them. I'm still picking them to cover every spread this year just because that's kind of how history has gone. I know that Ohio State team that went undefeated up until the national championship covered every spread. The Gators covered every spread except for the game they lost last year. And I know those teams kind of came from out of nowhere a little bit more, so they weren't 63-point favorites at the beginning of the year. But I think, you know, they were going to cover more, certainly far more often than they don't. So.
All right, then let's talk more about this game, what you're going to see on the field. What are you expecting of them on the field? You know, what should they be looking to do in this game?
Oh, I think the defense is going to show just how ridiculously good it's going to be this season. For as long as the starters play a quarter, a half, absolutely a shutout, I think if they cross midfield, that would be like a success for Charleston Southern.
Yeah, this game's going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be ugly. It's not going to be fun to watch, really, past the first or second quarter. It's just going to be domination, and it doesn't really matter who's on the field. Like, the second team and third team can be on the field, and it's going to be pretty much the same story. What I'm most interested in, and we should talk about this, is how many non-offensive touchdowns will they score? So special teams and defense.
Yeah.
I'd put it at 2.5, the over-under on that.
That's a really good number, because I was trying to decide between 2 and 3,
yeah.
Actually. I'll go with 2 for my number. I think Brandon James will return a punt because special teams is even worse on really bad teams. And they don't have the athletes, and James can just break a few tackles, and then there'll be some pick six or a fumble. I don't know.
I agree with you, and I'll also guarantee a safety. They always get a safety.
Nice. Safety?
Nice, yeah.
Okay. It'll probably be a punt blocked out of the back of the end zone.
Right.
They have him backed
That's
up.
That's cheap.
It's a short.
I'm going to go with them scoring a touchdown on the punt block this
Ooh.
Game. I'm going to go over 2.5, and I'm going to say they get two
defensive scores and then a special team score that I'm going to predict as a punt block. And we'll see if I'm right.
I'll say that they have two block kicks in this game, by the way. Right.
Wow. As ridiculous as this game is, I still think there are some things you can look at like going forward for the rest of the year. So I'd like to talk about some of those things now. Like, one thing I really want to see is they keep saying they've got three starting safeties and now six starting offensive linemen. So I'm interested to see, you know, the comparisons between those guys. And also, this team, they keep talking about how motivated they are and how, like, they're avoiding complacency and staying so focused and taking everything one week at a time. I mean, more so than you normally hear with teams, especially Florida teams in the past. So I'm interested to see if they'll back that up on Saturday. Because while this is a joke game, if they're really as focused and motivated as they say they are, then you won't see any lapse at all. And you'd see them cover that 63-point spread.
I just want to see what set includes three safeties deep in the...
They're going to take the penalty for too many men on the field just so they can get all the starters on the field. There you go.
Can't wait for that. Six offensive linemen. They're going to run the goal line set for their first play from scrimmage.
What do we expect out of them offensively in this game? Obviously, you're not going to see a whole lot of the starters. Are you going to see any receivers, you know, possibly break out?
That's the biggest thing, I think, to watch for in this game. I mean, these receivers are playing against Charleston Southern, and they're the biggest question mark on the field right now for Florida. If they can't get open and if they can't make big plays against Charleston Southern, there's going to be some real problems with this receiving core down the line. So you're going to need to look for a big day out of the receivers. This is a day they really have to step up and prove something. So I'll be interested to see how that goes.
On offense, everyone's going to have a big day. I think there's going to be multiple plays, and you've kind of seen this in the past in the Swamp when some of these teams come to town where everyone's open, and it's like you can just throw a touchdown to whoever you want on any given play. Like, literally, there are two or three options that can go for huge gains on any one play, and I think there's going to be more of that, a lot more of that that you see.
As far as receivers, I think this game will be key to kind of determining who's going to make plays this year besides the first three. Like, Riley, Deontay, and David Nelson, whatever you think of them, like, they're going to be what they're, you know, like, they might be a little bit better than last year, but it's like those other guys, like Frankie Hammond, TJ Lawrence. I mean, obviously, everyone is going to look good because Charleston Southern, but who will look better than someone else, maybe?
I think that's a really good point. If you think back to some of the other receivers who have established themselves a little bit, some of their, like, first moments came against bad teams. Like, if you think about Percy Harvin against UCF with a big gash, Lewis Murphy caught a really long touchdown his sophomore year or junior year against one of these really bad teams. Riley Cooper had a couple big games a few years ago against really bad teams. Yeah. So, kind of, you earn your stripes against these type teams. So, if, you know, like you said, if Frankie Hammond and TJ Lawrence do nothing in these games, they're going to get buried. This is their time to catch some long touchdowns because they won't get any other chances the rest of the year.
How much of an impact do those guys, the Frankie Hammonds and the TJ Lawrences, how much of an impact do they play down the road?
They're going to have to play a big impact down the road. I mean, there's no depth at receiver unless those guys step up, especially if Carl Moore is going to be out for an extended period of time. Yeah, Meyer said yesterday his back injury could be season-threatening, so that's a big problem if Carl Moore is out. And also, I mean, there's nobody really at tight end behind Aaron Hernandez, so you want to have some receivers that can take pressure off him and not have him have to be the guy.
I mean, they're one more big injury at wide receiver away from being in, like, a crippling position. Like, if Deontay, Riley Cooper, or David Nelson get banged up one week, they can't go. It's like, who's going to start as the third wideout? Like, I honestly could not tell you. I don't think the coaches could tell you. Like, that's a really – like, the drop-off right now from those three, the rest of them is really big.
I think that's really the point to be made because if the three of them stay healthy, you're going to see very little of TJ Lawrence and Frankie Hammond for the rest of the year. I mean, they'll catch maybe 10 balls the whole year. But if one of them gets hurt, they're going to have to play. Like, they have to put somebody out there at the position. So it could get really interesting if an injury happens.
We're not talking about Andre DeBose right now. What's his status at currently?
Big problems. We talked about this on the last podcast, I think. He might have a torn tendon in his hamstring. Might require surgery. They say they haven't decided yet. If he does have surgery, he's going to redshirt this year. Yeah. You won't see him on the field. The alternative is to just rest and let it heal. But that's what they've been doing for months and nothing changed. Meyer said he talked to Bob Stoops, the Oklahoma coach, about it because their running back, DeMarco Murray, had a similar injury at the end of last season, so he talked to him about how to handle it. And if I had to, you know, bet on it, I would say you won't see Andre DeBose on the field this year.
Yeah, I would agree with you because if we think back to Murray's injury, he didn't play in the national championship, right?
No.
And, like, he sustained that injury a month prior because there's so much time between the Big 12 championship game and the national championship. That was, like, 4 or 5 weeks they were resting him to play in the biggest game of the season. You have to think, like, Andre DeBose, if he rests, he could possibly play in a postseason game, but it's like, he's not going to be ready to go. Like, he hasn't been working with the team, even if he could play.
He needs that developmental time, exactly, which is now, and he's going to miss out on that. It's going to be harder to bring him in later in the year. Other thing I think will be interesting to watch this week is the running backs, see how all that works out, see if there's any different dynamic, if they actually go under center, and see if that changes the running game at all. I'm interested to see, especially Emmanuel Moody,
he's the big question mark. I mean, you kind of know what you're going to get out of Dempsey Rainey, although they're saying that Rainey, like, knows the plays this year, so maybe he'll look a little different.
Always but a good sign.
Emmanuel Moody has been pretty much a bust since he got here, so it'll be interesting to see if he can make any kind of change this year.
Does he get the garbage time in this game?
I don't know if there's even if it even comes down to really garbage time between those three, because I think you'll see a pretty heavy, like, rotation of them throughout games. Now, I don't know. It depends a lot on how much they're for real about going under center occasionally. I think how much they'll use Moody, because Dempsey Rainey's skill sets kind of fit better the offense that they've already got here, so...
I don't think they're going to... If they decide that going under center is something that's going to help them win games, which I don't think they will, but if they do, they're going to have to learn to run Rainey and Demps out of that formation, and Kenny Carter has said that they feel okay doing that, which I don't know how, you know, for real he is about that, but you don't want to make it a situation where you're taking, you know, your most explosive playmakers off the field, because you don't have those guys at receiver this year. There's no Percy Harvin. Those are the guys that are going to break long touchdowns for you. So, I mean, they can break it running up the middle, and they're going to have to. It's, you know, it's not the pros. Not everyone's as big as it's going to be, so they can probably do it here.
Do we feel like, because I know I do, that Demps has moved himself ahead of Rainey? Is there, like, a distinction? Because I know, like, I'm affected by the fact that Rainey was hurt at the end of last year, so we didn't really get to see him much against Alabama and Oklahoma. And I know Kyle's just waiting to answer this question. But, like, Demps has been the starter. And, like, last year I felt like they were kind of, like, equally used weapons. Whereas, like, now I see, like, Demps is one and Rainey maybe not two, but, like, you know, one and a half or something.
I think it's one and two for sure. Jeff Demps is clearly head and shoulders above Chris Rainey. He grades out at a 90 every single day. The coaches love that. And I think he just does more things than Chris Rainey does within the offense. I think he's going to be a better pass-catching option. He's going to run cleaner routes. They like his blocking. So he can just be on the field for more things that are going on. That's going to increase his production.
I think so too. So I would definitely put Demps one also. But I think if Rainey is fully healthy, he still had some kind of shoulder injuries. If he's fully healthy... They constantly say he's their best runner they have between the tackles with the moves that he's able to make in the interior of the defense. So that's one thing that I think Rainey has an edge at, and it'll depend on how the offense shakes out this year. A lot like what Kyle said, a receiver will kind of dictate how the running game goes as well.
That's a really good point about Rainey's definitely, I think, a better between the tackles runner. So if they want to do more stuff like that, he's probably their guy. And it's definitely not a situation where Demps is a feature back or anything like that. He'll probably get the majority of the touch, or he'll get more touches than any of the other backs, but he's not going to be like the only guy. He's not going to be a workhorse. He's probably not going to get more than 15 touches a game at the very most. So.
I think the most exciting thing that I actually think the Florida offense could do this season is using both of them on the field at the same time.
Yeah, that could be
like,
sweet.
I think that could be lead to really big things, either options, like reverse. I don't know. There's just so many options when you have, like, two guys that explosive. Like, the defense can't go to one side of the ball or anything like that.
Well, that's how Demps – part of the reason why Demps was able to be so successful last year was having Harvin on the field. You don't have Harvin, the next best thing is each other. So, I mean, they need to do that. And also, I'm interested to see how the Brandon James experiment works out in slot. They keep pushing him as a wide receiver. I physically cannot imagine him running routes downfield and catching passes.
That's not what he's going to be doing, though.
I don't think so either. But I mean, they're saying that he is, like, the backup to David Nelson. So, like, what, they totally change the offense when Brandon James comes in? I mean...
I can't fathom him being split out past the numbers and catching passes down the sideline.
No, he's in the slot. That's David Nelson's in the slot, and then Brandon James is like his backup in the slot. That's what I don't understand. Like, how could those two guys possibly be playing the same position?
Right. I can't fathom Brandon James running any route. Like, I can only imagine Brandon James catching a pass, like, from, like, next to Tebow and, like, flares out.
They're going to be able to use him in motion, coming across the formation, possibly hand the ball off to him. They're going to be able to use him running routes over the middle of the field, drags and little ins and stuff like that, maybe little hitches even, and in the screen game. But, I mean, that's about all you can use him for. He's not going to be able to run, like post routes or corners or anything like that. I mean, anything where he has to go downfield, beat a guy, and then kind of jump over him is not going to happen. So, yeah. I mean, anything that he catches is going to be get him the ball and let him run with it. So
he's going to be a tough target to hit, but one thing that you have to give him, and you see this on all his punt returns, is he is really not bothered by being in the middle of a bunch of people. I mean, he is so good at moving. He could be within, like, a foot of someone, and they'll never touch him. So that's where I think bringing him across the middle of the field could be exciting and kind of fun to watch, get the ball in his hands there.
Right. He's also, like, a matchup issue. I mean, if you try to put – I mean, obviously he's really small. But, like, if you can get – if you have a linebacker matchup with him and he can beat him one, two steps, it's like then James is gone, then he's shifty. But, yeah, that target for Tebow to get that ball there is small. And if, like, a defender's on him, it's almost, like, near impossible.
Over-under on passes he catches over the shoulder this year. I'll put it at a half.
Yeah.
I'll go under.
I'll pick the under.
I want to see it so bad. That would be, like, the coolest thing ever, him catching a pass over the shoulder. Like,
I say he gets one or two like that. I don't know. Give him the benefit of the doubt.
Do you think they line him up, you know, outside at all during the Charleston Southern game, just to test sort of...
No. It doesn't make sense because it's not, like, his position at all. I mean, if they do, it'll be something weird where, like, Tebow's the other receiver out there. It'd be, like, a total wreck of a formation where he's coming in motion or something, but... You'll never see him line up far out wide and run a route from there. That doesn't.
Do you think they would run the Wildcat with James at all?
Maybe. I mean, they have like all these guys who are kind of similar, like skill sets. I mean, I don't see a reason to put Brandon James there over anyone else. Is my question, but I don't see a reason to put anyone there that's not Percy Harvin or Tim Tebow either. So I guess that's my take on it.
I'm gonna say no, but I'm gonna say they probably don't run the Wildcat at all this year, but. I don't know. Joe Hayden's kind of interesting because he may be able to throw a little bit. And by throw a little bit, I literally mean a little bit. Like, he's going to roll out, the defense collapses on him, and he drops it over the head of a couple defenders, you know? Like, not going to hit anybody downfield on a route, but...
He's not going to hit Brandon James over the shoulder.
I don't think you want Brandon James trying to do stuff like that, you know, just kind of drop it over the top of defenders. Yeah. So I think that could give him a little bit of an interesting dynamic.
Right. So we don't think that they'll run even, like, a Dempster or Rainey in the Wildcat at all? Like, that's
that.
The vibe I'm getting. Oh, okay.
Occasionally, like what they did with Harvin.
Right, okay.
I think that the Hayden idea is a really bad one because he doesn't throw as well as Tebow or Brantley. He doesn't run as well as Tebow or any of the running backs. Like, plus, he's your probably most valuable defensive player because I'm still not sure about the whole Marquis Anderson third corner thing, them being confident enough in him being a starter to put Hayden on the other side of the ball. I mean, I think it's one of those things where, like, Hayden probably has to do it. He's like a leader on the team. They let him mess around with it. Maybe he'll get in for a couple plays, but it should never be something they rely on and never something they do. There's no reason to do it. Like, you're taking off the best possible player suited for that position, Tim Tebow, and putting on a valuable defensive player. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Right. I think it's almost like it's like trick play status. I mean, obviously the Wildcat itself is not trick play, but it's like maybe the end of the season, like they might have to run it somewhere once just to see that it physically works in a game, like some SEC game that they're up two touchdowns. But then it's like maybe the end of the season, SEC championship, if they make it there, they throw in the package. I don't know.
Another thing is like in 2 years of like being at Urban Meyer press conferences, I've never heard him talk about something like this and then do it. Like, just that's talking true. About throwing something random in there that's, like, I guess, like, a secret, and then actually doing it, that never happens. So, like, the stuff they do that's cool and, like, interesting is stuff that you don't really see coming.
Do you think he's just trying to throw people off, or do you think it's something they're toying around with and didn't just scrap?
There's so many ways to look at this, because that's how I feel about it. But then you have the fact that, like, Hayden says he works with Loeffler, the quarterback's coach, every day. Loeffler says he's never worked with Hayden. So, like, is it that, like, Hayden has, like, an ego they're trying to satisfy, and he's just saying whatever, and it's, like, a trick, and then Loeffler's not going along with it? Or is Loeffler being a jerk, which I think he is a jerk, and just saying that, like, this hasn't happened because he's trying to keep it under wraps? But then if he's keeping it under wraps, why is Meyer talking about it so openly? I don't know.
Not on the same page. Quite the conundrum.
Yeah, this whole thing makes little to no sense as far as the dynamics between Loeffler, Hayden, and Meyer, and, like, the secrecy or not secrecy that's around the situation. So, who knows? This is something we're going to have to see on the field. I believe either, though. I believe that it's something they're seriously going to try out, or I believe that it's something that they never seriously considered. I don't know. Either scenario I could see unfolding.
I want them to run Hayden and Tebow in the backfield. So, like, you got, like, a dual quarterback set, and then, like, Dempst as well. Like, they can do some weird option pass.
Weren't
crazy.
They saying they might get Brantley and Tebow on the field at the
same
time? That
would be awesome. I'm all for that.
Yeah. I like to see it, like, if you're familiar with the A11 offense where you have two quarterbacks.
Yeah.
You have them line up next to each other. Brantley can roll to his right. Tebow can roll to his left. Yeah. You have them both start running at the snap. You don't have to pass the ball first.
It's chaos.
And then you have two guys in the slot come in motion. They could potentially take handoffs and go the other way. And then have a quarterback for a lead blocker going down the sideline.
I like it better this way. All right. You have Dempson Rainey lineup in the two quarterback system. They both roll to the opposite ways where they can hand off to Brantley and Tebow, who would then be rolling to their throwing sides.
Oh, yeah.
And the other way, huh?
This is excellent.
Yeah. Wow. Dunlop's at tight end.
This for flag football. I would try this.
I'm going to put this in NCAA if I can.
Urban hasn't talked about that yet, so he could be doing
Carlos
it.
Carlos Dunlop would be an awesome tight end. I think. That would be really fun to watch. He's got huge hands. He's got banana hands.
I just want to talk to him after the game, after he catches like a touchdown, too, because he is such like a he will talk smack.
Well, Justin Tratow is supposedly going to be Mike Vrabel this year.
Oh, right. I forgot. So every catch is a touchdown.
Yeah, catch a few touchdowns.
Yeah, I don't know if we've talked about that on the podcast before, but Meyer said, you know, defensive end Justin Tratow is now their goal line tight end because they don't have anybody behind Aaron Hernandez. I guess Matt Patchen is kind of in that role. So after my boy James Wilson beats him out as a starter and Matt Patchen's pushed to the bench, maybe we'll see Patchen more at tight end. But yeah, the Tridell thing is going to be interesting to watch. I mean, he's pretty skilled. He does. He's one of those guys that does everything they ask him to. They always talk about how he has a high motor. You'll always hear high motor with Justin Tridell. So I think he'd be an interesting, you know, play there.
Can we put that in, like, top five, like, useless cliches? Like, high motor. Can somebody break that down? Like, can somebody show me a high motor and a low motor guy and, like, a big difference on game day?
Omar Hunter, low motor.
Yeah, like, it's a practice effort thing. Isn't that essentially what that means?
No, like, it means in the game, like, you just don't stop. Like, Joakim Noah is a high motor guy. And Maurice Spates is not. Maurice Spates is a low motor guy. Good.
Dunlop didn't used to be a high motor guy, but apparently now he is.
Yeah. But he still went hard on game day. He didn't take plays off.
Hard, man. No, he kind of, there were some plays where, like, what you see with defensive ends sometimes, like, they pick their spots when they're going to really try and sack the quarterback, and the other times they're just trying to get in the area and make it look like they're trying hard. Yeah. And now you see Dunlop is more of, like, fulfilling what they hoped he would. Every play, he's, like, a total, like, wild card. You don't know where he's going to come from.
Yeah. He's a freak. Athletic freak.
Yeah.
All right, well, somehow this all came off of a discussion of Charleston Southern, so I guess let's finish this segment up by giving some score predictions. Are we cool with that?
Sure, I'll let Mike start over there.
I wish we had the newspaper. So I guess you had
them winning by 62 points.
Okay, I think it was 68-6.
Yeah, that's what you said.
Because I had a touchdown. Or I had a touchdown, yeah. I have, what's that, 9 touchdowns, a safety, and a field goal for Florida, and then 2 field goals for Charleston Southern.
All right, I will go 66-7. I have Charleston Southern winning with the spread, but I see, 9 touchdowns and a field goal. I think they want to get a field goal out of this game.
All right. I'm good for one a year, so this might be it, you guys out there. I'm going 65-0.
Ooh. I will say,
see if that happens.
I'll say 73-6.
Ooh.
73-6.
So you also have them covering.
Yeah. All right. All right, and with that out of the way,
I'm going to make a prediction of when Kyle will predict the correct score. Huh. It's going to be Tennessee, because we're going to argue over it really hard. Right.
Last year it was the Hawaii game I got right.
Yeah, so there you go. Let's move on. Let's do some season preview stuff. We'll just go position by position here, breaking down every position on the Florida team. Let's start with quarterback. There's not a great deal to talk about there.
I mean, I really like Jordan Reed, guys. I'm really intrigued to see his development in the next couple of years. He's really good with the media, really quotable, and future Tim Tebow. Jordan
just
Reed.
Happy to be here.
Yeah,
Jordan Reed. I've heard rumblings, by the way, that Jordan Reed is going to be converted to tight end.
I saw Thank that God. Somewhere too.
Yeah.
That's because he actually wanted to ever play on Florida Field.
Right.
Okay. Good.
And I mean, that's a good move for him because he can't throw it all.
It's awful.
Good move for the team.
Yeah.
Also.
Right. Yeah.
It's a good move for all parties involved.
Why did it take this long? Like this should have happened like months ago. Like he should have never worked out a quarterback in the offense.
One thing I did actually want to talk about QBs before we leave those, how much time does Brantley see come regular season, you know, when the games get real?
I think he gets used a little bit less than Tebow did in his freshman year.
Okay. I'm going to go a lot less than, like not mop-up time, but a lot less than Tebow. Like, I say he gets 1 to 2 meaningful series. We can debate meaningful forever, but I'll go 1 to 2 meaningful series. One in the second quarter, and I'm a little undecided about when the other one is.
Is it always a full series? Do you think they bring him in?
No, that's what I was about to say. I don't think he ever plays a full series.
What they used to do, okay, I was a huge Chris Leake supporter, and what they used to do, and I hated this so much, is they'd have Tim Tebow come in on first and second down, run the ball, and if he wasn't successful, Leake would come in on, like, third and long and then have to, like, throw the ball and save the day. So, like, I think you could see scenarios like that where it's like, all right, let's trot Brantley out, and then when it's third down, we're putting Tebow back on the field, which puts your starter in a really horrible position. And I always thought that was really unfair and maybe not the smartest way to do things, but no, they did that a lot Tebow's freshman year.
Bring Tebow in on third down, put him under center, make him run pro-style offense. He'll satisfy all the critics. Right.
I think he does run, like, a complete series, the second series of the second quarter or something is usually like a good time. They'll be up, I don't know, 17-0, but it's not mop-up time yet.
It's one of those things they do a lot of talking about that I'm interested to see where they're just totally confident in Brantley. But if they're at LSU and it's like 14-7 or
heck no, absolutely not.
Way, even though they keep saying like they would.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's absurd.
Even if it's slightly less close, it's just any scenario, this is what I was saying before, any scenario where the next day, if Brantley makes some mistake that could swing the game, how do you justify that? How do you justify John Brantley swinging a game for you when you have Tim Tebow. So any scenario where he could possibly do that with a pick six or something like that, even if they're up 10 or 14 points, I think that's too close. It's going to have to be like 3-touchdown margin at least for him to get in there.
It's an issue of why you put him at that point. Like, are you putting him in to make him better for the future, to help prepare him? Because you're not putting him in because he can do something better than Tebow, right? Like,
no.
That's outrageous. And if Urban or anybody makes that claim,
we should ask Brandon Spikes this question. He would feel comfortable putting in Brantley with like a 14-7 lead at LSU. He'd probably say, absolutely, bring it on. We need the challenge.
Well, see, the thing is, though, it's like there's also going to be a debate over even mop-up time, because the thing is, if you – all right, this team's going to be great probably. They're going to win a lot of games by 3-4 touchdowns. And if they're trying –
5-6-7.
Yeah, whatever. They're winning by a lot of points. So arguably, like, mop-up time could start really early, like third quarter, halfway through the third quarter. But if you're trying to get Tim a second Heisman and even – you know, it's like what kind of stats? How do you weigh – like, I mean, they're never going to – risk completely getting him injured, like running him all the way through the fourth quarter to put up stats. But like, how do you think they'll weigh wanting to get him some numbers?
This is the high school dilemma, and it's the same thing that happened at Nice when Tebow was like nearing like state records, where they wanted to pull him out at halftime and not have him just pound these jokey teams all the time. So it's a lot of it. It all falls on Urban Meyer. It all falls on like his ethical sense, I guess. I think it's totally acceptable, especially against SEC teams, to play Tebow for at least three quarters. Nobody should ever be able to complain that they're playing a conference opponent and they only pulled their starter out like at halftime or something. Like, it's ridiculous. They should definitely be able to play him for three quarters and feel fine about it.
Responsibility to your opponent is not a factor. They can stop you at any given time if they have enough will. So that never comes into play. But here's what I think Meyer should do. He should sit Tim down. I know this isn't going to work because this is how Tebow operates. This is what he should do. He should sit him down and he should say, I want to get you stats and I want to leave you in the game. The way we're going to do this is you're going to sit there and you're going to throw the ball. And you're not going to take on linebackers in the third quarter up 30 points. You're not going to do it because I'm going to pull you and I'm going to put Brantley in if that's what you're going to do. But if you're willing to sit there and drop in touchdowns over the defense and just throw the ball around the field, we'll leave you out there. So that's what I think they should do to get him stats and leave him in the game, is severely limit the amount of punishment he's taking on his body. But it's Tim Tebow, he's not going to do that, so we'll see what happens.
Exactly. I was just about to say, I really like that idea, could never see that working.
Right.
And, you know, he would even agree to it and then, you know, have a play like Oregon's quarterback last night, Mazzoli, where, like, he just runs into two defensive players when he's standing next to the sideline.
Yeah.
I do definitely agree with Mike, though, because I'm from, like, the sportsmanship aspect. Like, if they're up, like, 50 points at the beginning of the fourth quarter of an SEC game, I say, you know, you take Tebow out if they're up 35 points. But, like, no, you have no, absolutely zero responsibility for sportsmanship for the first three quarters of a conference game at all.
See, and you guys didn't want to talk about quarterbacks. Look what happened there. We already talked about running backs a little bit. Is there anything anybody wants to add to that discussion?
Moody production, do we think he'll do more than last year? How sold are you on him?
I don't know, because it depends on how much you believe what they say about under center. And most things that I hear in the offseason I tend to not believe, although this is something that, like, since we saw it in practice, in spring practice a little bit, it makes me think they'll do it some, like going under center, which I think suits Moody the best. But, I mean, it's kind of like a chicken and egg thing, because, like, do you start running that package because Moody's playing well, or do you start...
Do you run it well and then he starts playing well, right?
Yeah. So.
My thing is, like, so you're saying, would we all agree, or is the consensus that if they don't go to, let's say they never run under center or not very much, like it's not a factor, Moody's not a factor, like are those two like equivalent?
I won't say not a factor, but not nearly as much of a factor as he could be.
Okay. I don't think Moody's ever going to be used for Moody. You know what I'm saying? I don't think it's ever going to be a situation where it's like, we need Moody's services. I think
sure.
We need to rest some guys and expel some people. So Moody's going to get some carries. Because you think the logical place would be like, all right, let's make him the short yardage goal line guy. But Tim Tebow's your short yardage goal line guy, and he will be until the end of time here. There's no way you're ever going to get the ball out of Tebow's hands on the goal line or in third and short. So I just think that, you know, there's really no place for Moody to do things that other people can't do. So it's just going to be a matter of spreading the carries around and, you know, keeping everyone fresh and explosive. And, you know, it's not going to be a situation where they're handing the ball back to one back 15 times in one game. Everybody's going to get 10 carries or so each, and that's going to be the way it works, I think.
With that being said, and he'll probably get plenty of mop-up time then, too, because, like, I don't know who the fourth running back is. I guess Chris Scott, Gillislee. Do you think they want to redshirt him? I'll get to that discussion in a second. But if he gets a lot of mop-up time, like, I mean, I could see him putting a better number than, like, Demps in, like, the first two games, because it's like you don't really need to play Demps more than 2.5 quarters, and you're running against terrible defense.
I mean, that's enough time for him to get 100 yards. Well,
200 yards, probably.
Two carries is enough time for him to get 100 yards, assuming you're at least 50 yards away for each of them. But I don't want to step on a later thing, but who do we think is going to lead the team in rushing this year?
I mean, I'm still going Tebow.
Yeah, I say Tebow.
I think it's Tebow.
I'm going Demps. You know I'm going Demps. Nice. So I'll probably be wrong, but I'm going with it.
I mean, I have him on our Alligator Sports Fantasy Challenge fantasy team.
Just comes Demps, in at exactly 950 yards on the year.
Absolutely. I actually could see him being the first 1,000-yard rusher in a while. But, like, Gillislee, like, you think they play him for mop-up time or leave mop-up time for Moody and redshirt Gillislee?
I don't really see any reason to play him. I mean, it's going to be one of the, they don't make decisions on redshirting at the beginning of the year.
Right,
they kind of see how it goes. So, I mean, if they think they need him during the season, they'll play him. I don't think they should, but it depends on injuries. I mean, Rainey's a little injury-prone. Mm-hmm. Moody's very injury-prone, so.
I think they want to have three. So, if one of them goes down, I think Gillislee could see some carries. But as long as the three of them are healthy, probably won't see it, especially because Demps and Rainey are both sophomores, which is really ridiculous to think about. So they probably won't need him this year.
Christopher Scott
will not see any time.
All right, well, let's talk about the receivers now. Let's talk about those top three guys we sort of glossed over at the beginning, because I've said before I think they're all perpetual third receivers, and one of them will be thrust into the lead receiver, one will be second receiver. Let's talk about those guys.
I'm really sold on David Nelson. I can't really give any great reason. He stepped up some in the big games. I know that, like, his entire role, like, the running joke was always, like, David Nelson's in the game. Okay, they're going to run a screen so David Nelson can block. I understand this. But, like, and yes, he only showed a couple big, he called a little glimpses in SC Championship and BCS. But just from a leadership aspect, being around, he's going to know the offense really well after being here. This is his fifth year. But needing someone to step up, talent-wise, I think he's good enough. He's not like a Percy Harvin. But I think David Nelson could be Lewis Murphy.
I don't think they're the same kind of receiver. But if you're saying, like, level,
like, production-wise and reliability.
Yeah. He's real tall and smart, and if he can find the holes in the defense, he's a huge target. So I think that's pretty good. I'm still not sold on Riley Cooper. He runs good fly routes. He did a little more than that last year, though. Showed us a side of his versatility.
That catch in the SC Championship, for as much as I hate on Riley Cooper, was pretty sweet and a slant route.
Yeah,
I mean, they were 5 yards from the end zone. But
and Urban Meyer talks him up so much. Like, he has a great NFL future, and he's, like, the next best go-to playmaker after Tebow on the team. Like, I don't see it yet, but, I mean, I'll take, I guess, kind of take Meyer's word for it and see if Cooper does it on the field.
I wouldn't take Meyer's word that he has a great NFL future if he's going to be playing baseball. Yeah, so just throwing that out there.
I don't remember who I was making this point to the other day, but to me, I think something that kind of gets lost is that, like, everyone's talking about how do you replace Percy Harvin and now Lewis Murphy, too, and everyone thinks of Lewis Murphy as, like, a really productive wide receiver, and he was far from a sure thing last year. Like, going into last year, I thought Carl Moore was going to be, like, sweet and probably, like, the guy besides Percy Harvin on that team, and Lewis Murphy really, like, stepped up and, like, proved he could be, like, a really reliable option outside. So I think somebody will do that. I kind of think it's going to be Deontay Thompson, especially from, like, a big play standpoint, somebody who can get behind the defense. But, I mean, it helps. David Nelson and Riley Cooper are both big targets, which I think helps you in the red zone. I mean, they're going to make Tebow's job a little bit easier, where they can just they create matchup problems against cornerbacks if you can get them one-on-one. So I think they're going to be more, you know, short yardage type guys, possession receivers. And Deontay Thompson is going to be the guy who has to stretch the field, especially with Deboz out.
That's a really good point about Lewis stepping up from last year, because if I try to go back to a year ago, you're probably right. I mean, Murphy wasn't seen as this, like, solid number two. I feel like Mike wanted to disagree.
I think it changed after the spring game, because he had a really big spring game, as I recall.
All I remember is Chris Rainey breaking Ahmad Black's ankle.
I'm pretty sure that after the spring game, Lewis Murphy kind of got a lot of talk. And going into the season, he was actually in some, like, mock drafts kind of high.
Which was absurd. Yeah. My thing, though, is it's like, even last year, though, it's like, all right, whether Lewis was a set number two, either way, like, there was still Percy Harvin, that guy.
There's at least one solid guy.
Now there's, like, three semi-solid guys, like, arguably solid guys. And, like, this is probably a ridiculous argument, so I can't wait for all of you to shoot it down. But is there any benefit from not having one huge go-to guy? Because, like, no defense is going to double-team, I don't think, like, any one of those three guys every play.
They have a go-to guy. It's Aaron Hernandez. But at the receiving core, I don't think there's a benefit to that in any way.
No, because it was good to have Harvin draw attention and draw double teams and free things up for these guys who aren't as good at getting open. So, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, it's just going to be a different team. Like, there was kind of like a panic button when Harbin was here. It was like, okay, the game's close. The game's on the line. Like, Percy's going to touch the ball every single time. That's like, true. Literally, that's just what it turned into at points. And obviously, there's no one they're going to do that with. So, I mean, I think you're going to see the coaches identify what everybody does well and spread the ball out appropriately. It can't be a situation where we have one guy who can both take handoffs, run short routes, run deep routes like Percy did, and just do everything. So you're going to have to, you know, identify which parts of that game people can make up for and just put the ball in their hands. But they have enough guys. These are all really good football players who are more than capable of making plays against the best defenses in the nation.
All right, so it's the FSU game. They're on their own one-yard line. Who's Tim Tebow throwing the fly route to?
50-yard pass.
Yeah.
I guess
Cooper, right?
Cooper, yeah.
Yeah, because he's the fly route man.
Really fast. That's one thing I think that people...
It's just surprisingly.
People understand because he's white. I mean, I'll just say it. It's because he's white.
True.
He's really fast. I mean, the guy's a really good athlete. He was a safety in high school. Really highly, I mean, touted for that. So he's got speed.
I'm taking Deontay. I think of Deontay literally the same way I thought of Lewis Murphy at this point in their careers. Like, it's like he's shown he can get behind defenses. He's really young. Like, he did some things against bad teams that you, at least they showed you something, like Bill Simmons always talks about. Like, you don't have to be great right away, but you just have to kind of see, okay, this guy can contribute at some point. He's done some things. So I think Deontay Thompson actually emerges as a guy who is going to get behind the defense with some kind of regularity.
I could see that. Like, I'm really – like, I literally have, like, no projection for Deontay Thompson. Like, I could see him being really good, just what he was last year. Like, you know, so nothing – you know, or, like, he's the third wide receiver. But it's, like, my thing with Riley Cooper is, like, he's, like, always kind of perpetually hurt. It's almost like the Tim Tebow effect. Like, he is really fast, but he's, like, he usually has an ankle or a foot. So it's, like, he's – I know, an ankle injury, a foot injury. Yeah, I know. But it's, like, I think if he's ever 100% healthy, I don't know, maybe this year because he was playing baseball all summer, you know, if he's in shape, like, I think he could – I don't know. I'm just really low on Riley Cooper. I can't even build myself up over him.
I think – All right, this is pretty much, you know, hating on Riley Cooper, but I'm just going to do it anyway. I think of all the players, I think he feels like he has the least to, like, prove. Like, he has the least chip on his shoulder to, like, go out there and do something well. I think Riley thinks he's sweet and, like, he's got a baseball career and he's always, like, very, like, I'm the man. Whereas I think the other guys are really hungry. I think the other guys are hungrier than him and that's why they'll do better. That's
well,
what I'm trying to say.
You know, Riley Cooper started 12 games and had, I think, what, 16 catches. So that's really, you know, like, it's funny though because they always tout that he was, like, this starter every week and it's like, and he blocks really well. Billy Gonzalez always talks about Riley Cooper blocking really well. And that's important this often. I'm not saying it's not when you run a lot of screens and stuff like that. But, I mean, I'm just not sold that, like, I don't know, he's going to catch like 25 passes this year, which is not an absurd number if they play 14 games.
All right, well, let's move on to the offensive line then. I'll just throw it to Kyle. Kyle, start us off. What are you expecting the starting five to be on game day? The starting six, apparently.
Right, no, I can give a starting five, I think. It's going to be – I mean, I'll tell you the ones we know for sure. It's going to be Marcus Gilbert at right tackle. It's going to be Mike Pouncey at right guard, Marquise Pouncey at center – and then it's. I think Carl Johnson at left guard is pretty much a sure thing at this point.
Well, it
and then whether or not we see Matt Patchen or James Wilson at left tackle should be interesting, but I think we'll get Patchen there.
Right, I think, yeah, Carl Johnson's definitely the fourth starter, but Wilson plays guard, so Johnson
they
would slide
saying,
out the tackle.
Most recently,
no?
The other day, they said that Wilson was playing tackle and that he might interchange the two of them.
Is that Meyer?
Yeah.
He misspoke on that. Yeah, James Wilson is definitely still left guard, and if Patchen gets bumped, it's because Wilson played better at guard than Patchen played at tackle.
Okay, that's what it was this whole time, but the other day at practice, Meyer was saying that he got a specific question that said, so Wilson's playing tackle now, and he said, yeah, we've been using him there.
Because when they held out Marquise Pouncey last week in practice, it was so Mike Pouncey would play center, and then James Wilson would play the other guard position to work him out there. I mean, they slipped in this James Wilson tackle stuff earlier in the summer and said that, and it turned out to have never been true. Like, I don't know where it's coming from, because James has never been a tackle since he got here. He's not a prototypical tackle body. He doesn't have the arms. He doesn't play the way that a tackle plays. He plays the way a guard plays. He's pretty dirty, as the defensive players say, and he needs to be in the interior of the line. That's his position.
I just want them to play six offensive line on the first inning. That's all I want. Like, you don't have six starters. Just stop it. I know you're going to rotate guys.
I get the point. That they're trying to, like,
they're
keep
really
egos
good.
Happy here. They're trying to maintain egos, but, like, what – starters are people who are on the field at the beginning of the game. The receiver thing kind of made sense to me in the past because it was very package-oriented who started the game on the field. The offensive line and safety are not that way.
After this week, if we still can't get an answer on who the starting safety, if somebody says who's starting for you at safety and they say we have three starters, I'm going to follow up with who will be on the field for the first snap of the game defensively. Like,
yeah, they won't.
No, that's fine. Well, then let them look like more of, you know, liars and whatever you want to call them, because it's ridiculous that they just keep giving us the same BS and we just keep taking it.
If they keep saying this, it's because Will Hill is now a starter, and they don't want to hurt the guys who are the stat as well. Right. There's a rumor going around. I think Ahmad Black's dad may have said that Will Hill has beaten out Ahmad Black for the starting role. So then we could potentially have people playing in position for the first time ever with Will Hill at free safety and Major Wright at strong safety, where he belongs. And then Ahmad Black, I mean, I think Ahmad Black would be a good nickelback.
How high is Will Hill's ceiling? I want to ask this because, like, I was never that huge on him, like, but I didn't really know him. And then, like, I come to know him. He seems to be pretty good. People talk about him like he's, like, the Tim Tebow of the defense. Like, could he be Reggie Nelson's, like, heir?
That is, like, straight-up blasphemy to me. Like, until I actually see someone be Reggie Nelson, there will never be another.
Look, there is no ceiling, all right? He covers grounds like Reggie. He hits like Major, and he picks the ball off like a mob
this
black.
This is ridiculous.
Right?
So
him and Demps are, like...
So he's Eric Berry for Florida. Like, in, like, 3 years, you're going to have Heisman campaigns for Will Hill?
Next year.
Oh, okay. All right.
Wow.
I just wanted to make sure. My bad. How did that start? With the offensive
line
offensive again.
Line, yeah.
Okay. All right, well, anyway, you have three starters. You have Carl Johnson. Then we'll see the fifth on Saturday.
Yeah, you have four starters that are set in stone, with Carl Johnson potentially being at either position. And then you'll see who gets that last spot between Patchen and James Wilson. But I think it's going to be Patchen.
I think Patchen's only issue, like, he played some defense last year because they were hurt. His only issue really, I thought from hearing from Goodrich, was like a weight thing. It's like, if he's the weight, they really like him, he's really talented, he's really good.
I think it's Patchen as well. I think James will have his time here, and I think he'll be good, and I think he's a very valuable backup since he can play a few positions. So.
Yeah, I actually wrote a story on the offensive line like that about how a lot of them can play different positions, so... I think that's a good – they're well set at line in case something happens. Like, it's the opposite of the receiver situation. If somebody goes down, they have a lot of different ways to move people around and still keep an experienced line together.
Right. Like, we joke about the six starters thing, but if actually something happened and somebody went down, you know, like, it's good to have six starter quality people on line. Just they're not starters.
Right.
Who else is in that rotation if some other guys go down? If Sam Roby's name was tossed around a lot in the spring, is he still an option
apparently
at backup center?
Quite a bit.
I'm smoking Mary.
Yeah, that was a sham.
You could see that when Marquise Pouncey was held out of practice and then Mike Pouncey was the center. That kind of said a lot for Sam Roby.
Yeah, definitely.
They talked pretty highly of Jonathan Harrison, a freshman, and John Jalapio, whatever, he's a freshman.
I think it's Jalapio. Yeah.
Those two guys have been getting a lot. There's one more.
Mo Hurt gets
Hurt. He was hurt all last season, so I have, like, no read on him. And then Xavier Nixon, right?
Center.
Yeah, he's – oh, is he a center?
Tackle or
center? I thought he was tackle.
He's definitely not a center. I don't know if he's –
oh, okay. Right. I think he's a tackle. Like, he was pretty highly recruited. We haven't, like, heard anything in a little while. We'll just have to see. Like, honestly, I don't know too much about the offensive line.
Mohurt's hilarious to me. He's one of those guys where, like, they're never going to use him, but yet they still talk about him like he's, like, an awesome player. Like, Adazio was like, Mohurt's a player, guys. Like, Mohurt's the man. He's a great football player. It's like, why isn't he on the field then? Like,
well, like, last year, like, he was perpetually hurt from, like, 10 different things. Yeah. But, like, I think they were all real. I'm not hitting on that. But, like, he literally had the most ridiculous, like, string of injuries. Like, I just remember writing, like, notebooks each week where it was, like, Mohurt, shoulder, Mohurt, neck, Mohurt, like, ankle. Like, I think every part of his body was hurt last year.
I mean, there's a hurt joke to be made in there somewhere.
No one
gets Mohurt.
Yes!
That's the one. Nicely done. With that said, let's move on to the other side of the ball. Let's talk about the defensive line. Somebody pick up from there. What are we expecting?
I think the defensive line is going to be really good. Like, last year, there was a problem at tackle. And, like, I wouldn't say that, you know, they're going to have, like, the best tackles in the country. But I think they're a lot more solidified at tackle than last year. I think the ends are going to be great. I think Jermaine Cunningham and Carlos Dunlap are one of the best sets of defensive ends in the country, possibly, because it's like you obviously can't double team both of them, and whoever you don't double team can definitely get to the quarterback. And then before I throw it up, tackle, Marsh is pretty set in one position, and then the other one's up for grabs between Sanders and Jay Howard.
It's Jay Howard. Another one of those cases where I'm real slow to believe the people they hype in spring practice, like Marky Anderson, because it normally doesn't come true. But the difference with Jay Howard was, and I was slow to come around on this too, is if you just ask people point blank, who's the most improved player on the team this offseason, they all say Jay Howard, and they have reasons why.
Mm-hmm.
And that's different than the hype you normally get from people who have, like, an agenda to get a name out there. So, I mean, I'm a believer in Jay Howard. I guess he'll be pretty good this year. And then they have a good situation for the first time in a while, probably since 06,
where you've got Cunningham and Dunlop on the outside, and then Tridell's a reliable third guy, and then you have Marsh and Howard in the middle with Sanders a reliable third guy. And then you still have Omar Hunter, who could maybe come around, a couple other names. Troy Epps has been thrown out around a lot, transferred in last year.
Yeah, I think the Dunlap-Jermaine Cunningham combo is real well because I think they complement each other in what they're able to do. Carlos Dunlap's like a freakish pass rusher, and Jermaine Cunningham plays the run like really, really well for an end, incredibly well. And as far as the defensive tackles go, I just think you're going to see all three of them a lot. I really think that like you like a rotation on the defensive line. I mean, that's one position where, you know, even NFL teams love rotation on the defensive line. It's not like you can keep those guys in there for four quarters and keep them fresh. So I think they're at an ideal situation because I think they have three tackles that they feel comfortable with and can use a lot of times, even though it looks right now Jay Howard is definitely the starter, as much as I love Taryn Sanders. So.
Right, and that's a big thing that defensive line coach Dan McCarney's like stressed since he got here a year ago. Like, I'd have to say, like, in like 2 year stretches, like, I'm sure the talent was there too, so it helps McCarney look really good, but like, he's really just developed that line. Like, he's always talked about rotation, and now he has, you know, like, he says he has like 8 or 9 guys that he feels pretty good about throwing out there, and based on results last year, I can't really question it.
All right, I guess let's go to linebacker. I'm going to say that might be the deepest position on the team.
I would say that besides injuries.
In talent, yes.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the starters, definitely for this Saturday, well, they are set. That's the only position, I think, except for Tim Tebow, quarterback, that is set, and Jeff Demps. But the linebacker is Brandon Spikes in the middle and A.J. Jones and Ryan Stamper on the outside. Jones won, I believe, what would have been Brandon Hicks' job because Hicks was out with an ankle injury for a while. But, yeah, backups, what do we think there for the linebackers?
Brandon Hicks is healthy now. I think Brandon Hicks is awesome. I've always liked Brandon Hicks a lot. So I think you'll see him get a decent amount of playing time. The other problems, Dustin Doe is suspended. Brandon Beal has a neck problem, so he's not going to play. Jelani Jenkins is probably only going to play on special teams. He also has an ankle.
Boston's been banged up a little bit.
Yeah, but I think they said he's okay now.
Yeah, he's good to go.
He's the backup to Spikes, correct?
Right.
Okay. Yes.
So you got Boston behind Spikes.
I was going to say, sometimes they like to slide Stamper inside as like his backup or something
like,
outside.
Stamper can play anywhere.
He's a great man. I love Stamper.
Yeah.
And then you've got Hicks behind A.J. Jones and Lorenzo Edwards but on the other side.
That's right. Here's my take on linebacker. I've always thought of A.J. Jones the same way I used to think of Wandy at the beginning of last year, which is like they're not very good and they're just holding places until the younger guys can develop.
Yeah.
And I thought Hicks was the Janoris Jenkins. Like, we're just sliding A.J. in there until Hicks is a baller and then we'll get him in there. And then Hicks kind of got banged up and I think that got derailed. And supposedly Jones has been really good. But I'm still going to say Hicks takes his job by the halfway point in this season. So I think those will be the three guys you see the most this year, Hicks, Spikes, and Stamper. And then Lorenzo Edwards, I think, caught a break here with all the injuries that were going on in the second unit because I think he's gotten better, and a lot of guys have said Stamper was singing him some praises. And I think Stamper, you know, is like a team leader. I don't think he would do that with just anyone. And but he had to fight off, you know, Jenkins and Bostic that was coming in here. And I think them being hurt probably gave him a little bit of an edge. And if he can get some extra time in this game and these first couple games to show that he belongs as one of the second unit guys, then I think he could potentially see some good playing time this year.
I've always loved Lorenzo Edwards. I think he's awesome, and I think he'll have a good career. So I expect to see good things from him. I'd say Hicks will be a starter by the Tennessee game.
I'm so high on Brandon Hicks.
I love Brandon Hicks.
You said you don't expect to see Jelani Jenkins at all at linebacker this year.
I think you'll see him on special teams some. That's what Meyer
said. Yeah, I agree. I think he's
too small. We were talking about this game, though, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we're just talking about Charleston Southern.
Yeah, it evolved into like a season.
Do you need Jelani Jenkins to play? I mean, he could put on some more weight. He'd get bigger. When you get Doe back and you get these guys healthy, I mean, it'll be like every other case where as the season goes on, if they need him, they'll play him. But
I think Jelani's just too small. I think they want him to put on some weight. He's noticeably smaller than all the other linebackers to me.
I think he's given them a problem, though, because I think it was kind of when he came in, it was like a no-brainer that he'll pretty much redshirt this year and put on some weight. And then he kind of progressed a little faster than they thought he would. Mm-hmm. Real smart guy, that Jelani Jenkins. Picked everything up real quick. He just, you know, he keeps his head down and does what he's supposed to do. He doesn't complain, doesn't, you know, make any problems. Mm-hmm. So I think he's made it harder for them than it would have been had he been like any other freshman.
All right. Let's talk about the safeties then. We've already talked about this a little bit. There's three starters.
What would you do? Let's just put it that way. I mean, the way I think it is, I think you put Will Hill at free safety, Major Wright at strong safety, and then Ahmad Black at nickelback.
Yeah.
And then you have people playing where they need to be. Will Hill needs to be playing free safety, not playing nickelback or whatever. And you get Ahmad Black, who used to be a corner, come in and play man-to-man, which is what he's pretty good at, and then have Major Wright hit people, which is all he wants to do anyway.
let me roll some devil's advocate here, because the big argument that I hear, at least one of the arguments for keeping Black, besides, like, talent on the field, is that, like, Black proved himself last year throughout the season. Like, do you feel like there's nothing about that, like, should be taken into
play? I would be playing a lot of nickel, if I'm like, I'll put it that way. I mean, my take at the end of last season, and I guess I'm still going to stick with that, but just from what they say about Will Hill, it's hard to justify not putting him on the field. But I think you saw this summed up at that pick down near the goal line of the Oklahoma game. The four guys in that secondary, for whatever reason, are perfect together. They're a perfect fit. Everything went well last year. There's not a whole lot of reason to mess with that. I mean, except for if Will Hill's really, like, the best player on the team, like everyone says he is. I mean, so he would have to be really good to justify messing that up. So if you see what's the status quo broken up for Will Hill, it means that Will Hill is the truth.
He is. You can't keep him on the bench anymore. But I think they need to be flexible in what they do. I agree, like, their base system, I agree with McCall, should be Will Hill at free safety, Ahmad Black up in the box playing the run, Major Wright in the box playing the run, Ahmad Black covering receivers where he started. But I like Will Hill playing some nickel also, or at least playing up in the box, because he can cover some tight ends also, which the nickelback might have to do at times. You're taking a linebacker off the field, and that's going to be his responsibility sometimes.
Blitz him as well.
So if you want, if one of them is going to blitz, it's going to be them off the edge. So you can use him like that, and I think he gives you a better ability to do that than Ahmad Black. So maybe, you know, you adjust based on the other team's personnel. So if you play a team with a good tight end, if you play Arkansas, they got DJ Williams. We want Will Hill matching up with him. We're going to move him in when we play the nickel and go from there and slide Ahmad Black back. But, I mean, I think they'll do stuff like that. I think they'll be flexible. I think they'll play to the other team's strengths and weaknesses and move those three guys around because they're all good football players.
I got two things to say about that. They do really like their three down linemen package. And when you just think about it, like, it's scary to think about. You got, like, probably Jermaine Cunningham and Carlos Dunlap and then Marsh in the middle, like some big guy in the middle, Marsh, Hunter.
Earl Okine
was a big guy about that. Yeah, because he moved inside, so he's like used to that. Other thing, possibly lack of football knowledge coming out here. Is there any chance Ahmad Black could just go back to corner? Like, you know, since we're talking about if they want to play Joe on offense, whatever. Like, for a third corner, could Ahmad Black be better than Marquis Anderson in some situations, not all time?
I think at all times he could be, but I think a lot of that depends on Dee Finley getting better and Dorian Monroe being good. And also, who's the freshman? Josh Evans.
I think, moved back to safety.
Yeah, it depends on those guys coming up and Dorian Monroe healing from his recent knee injury, whether they'd be able to do that.
I mean, I think they definitely could, but if he's not getting the reps there and stuff in practice, I don't know if it makes sense to move him back there. And I also believe in Marquis Anderson. I think, again, he's one guy who's shown some stuff in the past that he can be good, and he just had a ton of injuries. So if he can stay healthy, I actually do believe in him, and I may eat that later. But I actually believe that Marquis Anderson's a solid third corner talk.
I mean, I buy it. It's just like if we have, like, a problem with positions, it's like, to me, it just comes down to, like, you want your best people on the field. Right. Like, unless, like, Marquis Anderson as a third corner is better than Ahmad Black at a third corner. You know, like, Ahmad Black's just better at safety. You know, like, but other than that, it's like Ahmad Black, Will Hill, and Major Wright, like, they just need to be on the field. It's like, however it works, like, obviously they're going to come off sometimes for, like, fatigue even, but it's like, I mean, I believe that they're, you know, very good. Maybe Will Hill's the best of the three or whatever, and they have a position that they're better at, but they should be almost interchangeable and just move around, and they should just two of the three, and sometimes three of the three should all be on the field.
And now, real quick on the cornerbacks, we all know who the starters are going to be there. It's going to be Hayden and Jenkins.
Ooh. We actually might not know because Jenkins,
just for this game.
Jenkins might be suspended for his arrest.
Oh, yeah.
Really funny moment yesterday. Adam Gorney from Rivals asked Urban Meyer point blank, trying to figure out if Janoris is suspended or not, because he's been avoiding that. Just went, who the starter is going to be at cornerback on Saturday? Which seems like a really obvious question. And Meyer was like, it's Joe Hayden and either Janoris Jenkins or. And then he paused like 10 seconds because he couldn't remember.
And he even said, he's like, who do we got at third corner? Yeah, like, he even said that. And then I just got upset at that point, and I was just like, so those two then? Because I was trying to trap him into saying something. It was just so ridiculous that he couldn't even come up with a third name for someone. But he didn't give up anything, so we'll see. If Janoris Jenkins isn't starting and doesn't play, it's because he got suspended for the off-the-field stuff.
I just thought his realization was, like, awesome. It was like, he was like, oh, right, yeah, I forgot Janoris, that whole thing. Like, oh, yeah, so Joe and, you know, someone, I don't know, it's really ridiculous.
I'm saying on down the line, it's going to be Hayden and Jenkins.
Set. Yeah.
and then it's going to be Marky Anderson, sort of that third guy. Yeah. And then is there anybody? I mean, Wandy's still kicking around.
Wandy's still kicking around. If Jeremy Brown comes back well from his back injury, that's the guy that supposedly was neck and neck with Janoris last year, going the year before he got hurt. So there's an option.
Yeah, Joe and JJ are just really good. They're two first round picks.
Yeah, they're two first round NFL picks.
Why you don't play Joe Hayden on offense.
Moving on. That's every position. Anything with the special teams you guys want to talk about? Oh, Chaz Henry still has an NFL leg, so there's no worries there.
Yeah, what do we think about all this? Like, I think it's total, like, crap. Yeah. Meyer keeps saying, like, it's neck and neck a kicker between Phillips and Sturgis. I mean, if he's taking into account kickoffs, I can kind of understand it.
But, yeah, I think he was just talking to Phil. Like, I think Sturgis will do kickoffs again. I thought it was ridiculous, though, that Meyer, like, did some, like, revisionist history and was like, yeah, by the end of last year, Sturgis is great on kickoffs. I was like, except for those games where he kept kicking out of bounds. Yeah. Like, except when you had to bring Phillips in to do kickoffs. Like, do you remember this? But anyway, I think it'll be Phillips a field goal, Sturgis kickoffs.
Yeah, I think John hasn't had the best attitude in the past at times, so they're trying to keep him motivated. And I think it's a situation where it's just like, we're just going to say Sturgis is nipping at his heels, even if he isn't. But one thing that is true is that Sturgis has a much bigger leg than Phillips does. So I said I wouldn't be totally shocked if they ever want to take a shot at a long field goal in a non-critical situation to trot Sturgis out there and let him kick the 50-yarders, whereas John's like your short-range Morton Anderson type. He's going to just knock all those down. So
right. This is like the argument that, like, there was the Ole Miss game where he could have kicked the field goal and didn't put Phillips in. That would have been, like, 42, I think, going back.
Which he can kick from that range.
Right, sure. Right. No, I wasn't saying he couldn't, but it's just like, you said non-critical, I understand, but, like, there's no critical situation where, like, he's not putting Tebow on the offense out there. And from, like, a non-critical standpoint, I mean, the only place I could see is if it's, like, there's, like, 2 seconds left in the first half, and it would be, like, a 51-yarder, and it's, like, you either throw a Hail Mary or kick a field goal, and he might still throw the Hail Mary. Like, I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
I guess I was thinking more like, you know, it's you're up by 14 points, and it's a 4th and 15, and you can kick a 45 to 50-yarder. That's when I would trot Sturgis out.
Maybe he punts. He might pooch punt, like throw it, get him at the 5. I don't know.
Sturgis does have a lot of talent. He's one of those guys that's kind of made me eat my words, because I predicted he'd be really good when he got here, and he's had a really slow start, kind of disappointing. So I mean,
so did Phillips though.
Right. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised to see Sturgis, you know, do something really good soon. And I mean, I don't know. Phillips has a lot on his plate between football and law school. I'm not saying that's going to, like, he doesn't have to practice that much to be the kicker, but it wouldn't shock me if, like, I don't know what's been wrong with Sturgis, because he has all the talent in the world. Like, if something, whatever he needs to click started clicking for him, it wouldn't shock me to see him kicking field goals.
Wasn't part of the problem, I mean, correct me if I got this wrong, but that, like, there was times when, like, Sturgis just wasn't connecting in clutch time in practice, where, like, Meyer would yell in his ear, and he couldn't make the big kick each week.
They do, like really specific drills. His thing, he was pushing it, like, right a lot, and then when they fixed that, he started pushing it left a lot.
It's like my golf swing. All right.
I think it's been a mental thing. Also, he talked about the difference between, like, the high school ball and the college ball, which I think is ridiculous, but it's more like rounded in high school, I guess. Like, it's easier to kick. So.
Is this BS? Like, really?
I think it's BS, but okay. They all talk about it. Like,
wow. All right.
I'm also going to say, I think Meyer likes a little bit of a veteran guy there. I mean, he was loyal to a fault to Hetland when he was here. And I think it's like, the kicker's like, let's be honest, the kicker's like the least part of the team of everyone. He's the least, like, guy you can count on as far as, like, you know what he can do every time. It's like almost like you don't really know what these guys can do until they get out there in game day. There's no way to, like, simulate that type of situation. So I feel like he's seen Phillips have a really good year. He's a veteran. He probably likes the attitude he's putting out right now. Like, he's just not going to take him out of there unless he really starts to play miserably, which he hasn't done. He had a good year last year. So
all right, so this is probably a ridiculous stat, and I'm pretty sure where you guys are going to go. But who is on the field for more snaps, Chaz Henry or Jonathan Phillips?
Ooh. I don't know. How many
season?
Yes.
Are you counting extra points?
Oh.
Because it's definitely that's easy. Yeah. It's not even close.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if it's not extra points, then it's Henry?
Yeah, but it's closer. It's pretty close.
If it's not extra points, it's definitely Henry. No, because they don't kick field goals. That's how they do here in Florida. I think he had 13 attempts last year. Is that right? 13 or 14 attempts?
I think it was 12.
There's
no
way Chaz
13.
Didn't at least get 13, 14 points.
He had. I'll say Henry.
Henry for sure, if we're not counting extra points.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about the Gators' schedule this year. I don't think any of us in the room think they're not going undefeated, at least till the national championship game, correct?
Correct.
That is correct.
Correct.
All right. Well,
it's fact. Move on.
Instead of bothering going game by game, we're just going to say what do we think is the Gators' toughest game this season. Let's start with that, actually. McCall?
Toughest or what will end closest?
What will end closest?
Arkansas at home.
Schnopes. Close, but it's actually FSU at home. You misspoke.
Yeah. Phil?
I had Arkansas at home as well. McCall heard me say it earlier and just liked the idea so much.
Nice.
I'll say FSU at home as well. We're 2-for-2 here.
Phil and I also have a bet on this.
Yes, we do.
We need to break this tie. Now, the whole time we've been doing this podcast, Mike DeFerdinando has been sitting in the corner like a church mouse, not saying a word.
You're breaking down the fourth wall.
FSU or Arkansas?
Which one's closer?
FSU for sure.
Yeah! I was all for that because I knew that the whole time.
That's awesome. Three people to be wrong in a couple months. Yeah, we'll
the see. Funny thing is nobody's saying LSU. A lot of people, I think the public tends to think that LSU
the only
on
person
the road.
In the southeastern United States is not in Louisiana that likes LSU is Phil. So go ahead, Phil.
I really like LSU, but, Urban Meyer's, just in big games, it's I never worry about Florida in a big game, something they're semi hyped up about. I mean, they lost there in 2007, but they were just not as good. Right. LSU's better. This year, Florida LSU's the game of the year. They're going to win by 40 points.
Wow.
I mean, it could be, 51-21 last year?
It's going to be huge.
They could win by more than that this year because they care. They're on national TV.
I agree with Phil.
All right, well then let's take the opposite of that. What is their biggest win? This year.
Counting FIU.
Yeah, Troy. Conference
yeah,
games.
Yeah, conference, about. Games.
Conference plus
games.
FSU.
Okay. Yes. Sure.
Vandy.
All right. You ready, Mike? Tennessee will be their biggest conference win plus FSU this year because they're going to be the most up
the
for it. And Tennessee's not good.
Does Tim Tebow play the entire Tennessee game, even if they're up big?
No.
No. Okay. Just asking. I'm going Mississippi. I guess there's too much love there for Mullen. I'll go Kentucky.
I will say Mississippi State.
I forgot about Mississippi State.
Wow, we picked four different games?
A noon game.
This is outrageous.
Someone will be right.
A noon game in Starkville. I don't know. I don't see it being really high.
Well, and I think it's
terrible.
They call off the dogs as much as humanly possible.
Yeah. I think Tim just starts taking a knee out of love for Dan.
Yeah.
He just points to the sideline.
Yeah. That game will be a long, subtle shot at Dan Mullen. Meyer doesn't want to do any favors for him, I guarantee you. He's going to go after him,
really?
But he won't do anything blatant that you see. It won't be like the timeouts against Georgia. Yeah. It'll be something that he can defend easily.
This is outrageous.
No,
you think they have it against
each
other?
Boys. No,
yeah,
they're,
I don't believe this
they're
at
boys
all.
To the nth degree.
Yeah, no way.
Meyer thinks Mullen was stupid to take the Mississippi State job.
Yeah,
so
he's not going to penalize him.
He's going to show him why.
He's in the West. This is outrageous.
No. No way.
You're wrong. Next.
All right. Our next topic then is...
I just can't wait for the season to be done. So we can look back on everything, see who was right.
Let's replay this.
We'll go back. We'll revisit some of these predictions we're making at the end of the year. But let's talk about some freshmen we think could make any impact. I don't think any freshmen are going to make huge impacts because so much of the team came back. But let's just go around the room here and say one freshman you think is going to make a meaningful impact.
Who do you think is going to make the biggest impact?
Yeah.
I don't think that this is necessarily going to be big, but I'm going John Bostic.
Yeah, with DeBoz out, no one is going to make an impact, but I'm going to go with Glissley, I guess. Huh. I think he has the next best chance to see the field. But I'm also going to go with the freshman I like the most, which is Josh Evans, and he'll make no impact. But I hope he does.
Yeah, I'm going to go Bostic as well.
I'm going to say Jonathan Harrison on the line. I think he gets rotated in there. I mean, it's hard to judge impact by that. But if he sees a lot of snaps, if he sees a lot of time, especially if he gets more as the year goes on.
A reasonable pick.
Yeah, yeah. Perfectly reasonable. Not exciting, not boring. Yeah. That's about where I'm at. Let's talk another thing about a sleeper and a bust for this year. One player each. Who do you think is going to be better and worse than they're expected to be this year? Start with McCall. Sleeper.
Oh, that was a bad move. All right, sleeper this year.
This is fun.
This is awesome.
I'm going to say Emmanuel Moody. I think Emmanuel Moody has a decent year this year.
Good sleeper.
All right, Kyle.
We're doing all sleepers first?
Yeah.
All right.
Thank God.
my sleeper, I've already said it's Deontay Thompson. I've built him up already. I think he leads the team in receiving yards for sure, so I'm going to go with him.
All right, I'm going Frankie Hammond Jr. I think he's going to distance himself from T.J. Lawrence. I don't think he'll obviously be as good as the top three, the Riley Cooper, Deontay Nelson, but I think he's the solid fourth guy, and we'll see significant time.
I like that.
I know this is ridiculous because I'm about to pick a defensive sleeper, somebody who's going to make a bigger impact. I'm going to say Jeremy Brown. He's a lot more time than you than you expect early on.
All right, he's got to get healthy.
That's a deep
gotta
sleeper.
Got to heal that back.
That's a deep sleeper for the end of the year.
That's REM sleeper.
Look forward to that. Let's go to Bust then. McCall?
I don't think Tebow has what it takes to get it done over a third season. Bust. Really shouldn't have come
Do you want to come back to
How do we define bust?
What is a bust?
Yeah. Can I take Emmanuel Moody for
That's all right, awesome. Well, my bust is Ahmad Black for sure. There's no way he follows up that performance, that fluky performance he managed last year. Will Hill totally supplants him, and Ahmad Black, his glory days are over in Gainesville.
Mm. All right, I don't think I feel as strongly as Kyle. Mine's like a little bit of outrageous, but I'm actually going Chris Rainey. He rushed for like 650 yards or something last year. I don't think so. I think he'll be hurt for a significant point of this season. Like, I think he missed one and a half, three quarters of last year. I think he'll miss three or four games. I think he'll rush for 500 yards or less.
And you know what that means.
Demps will get a lot of yards. Demps. It was really like for my fantasy team for Demps. That's what it was.
All right. My bust is going to...
Mike. Oh, okay. No,
are you still thinking?
Yeah.
All right. My bust is going to be Deontay Thompson. I do.
Oh! How dare you?
Yeah.
Oh! That's okay.
I just think he's
I'll try not to be too obnoxious.
He's from
SoFla.
I think he's a lot of raw talent. I don't know if it'll pay off this year.
Riley Cooper. I think he actually does about what I expect him to do, but not what he's been pumped up to be doing this year.
What he's expected to do would be more or less than what he did last year.
About on par.
Okay. So you have him doing about what he did last year?
Yeah.
Okay.
You don't think he's
Which is bad.
No, he's expected to do more. I think
I'm sorry.
My expectation. Yeah.
Okay. That's reasonable. Yeah. Sure.
Of course it's reasonable.
All right. And then our next segment, something we haven't really done before on here, something we're going to call the name game. And we're going to do a couple different things, different stats, and we're going to say some players, and we'll all go around the room and say who's going to get more of that stat or who's going to finish above and that. We got about five or six here. We'll start with sacks. Jermaine Cunningham or Carlos Dunlap? Phil.
Going Jermaine Cunningham. Carlos Dunlap sees more, too many double teams to beat out Cunningham.
Dunlap, and it's not even close. He gets the double digits this year.
Ditto.
I'm going to say Cunningham because I think Dunlap gets
close to the record. Anybody got Dunlap close to the record? 13.5.
Yeah, I got him close to that. He'll challenge it. I'm not saying he's going to break it, but he's going to be close.
10.5 sacks.
Okay. Wow. I got him at about 6, 7 most.
Not a half more.
All right, and then our next thing here is who will have more receptions? Deontay Thompson or Riley Cooper?
Deontay Thompson.
Thompson.
Cooper.
All right, let's go back to McCall. Thompson or David Nelson?
David Nelson.
David Nelson or Aaron Hernandez?
Aaron Hernandez, most receptions on the team.
Okay. You feel the same way?
I got Thompson over Nelson, and then Hernandez over Thompson.
Interesting.
All right, so I have Cooper versus Nelson.
Yes.
I've got Nelson. I'm going to make the most – I'm not even at outrageous yet. I say Nelson catches more passes than Hernandez.
All right.
You're forgetting the shovel pass.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll see. Doesn't that count as rushing yards?
I'm not sure, he'll count actually. He'll catch more shovel passes than David Nelson catches any passes.
Okay, that's absolutely ridiculous.
It doesn't count as rushing yards because otherwise he'd definitely be past John Brantley on the counting rushing yards. Yeah, it's received.
I'm going to say it's Hernandez, Nelson, Cooper, Thompson in that order.
Fools.
I'm down on Thompson.
Yeah.
I'm down on Thompson.
We're talking catches with him also. I think he'll be more yards per catch than the other guys.
I do too.
Yeah.
But it'll also be more catches.
All right. And the next thing is a rushing thing. Who has let's just go Phil this time. Rushing yards, Rainey or Demps? You obviously.
Demps.
All right. Demps or Tebow?
Tebow.
All right, Kyle. This is the moment of truth for you.
Demps, and Demps. All the way through.
Oh, my God. Demps if he gets hurt, are you going to be okay? Do I have to worry about you?
I'm going to go into a deep depression.
Okay. Demps, all
right. All right. McCall, Rainey or Demps?
Tebow, Demps, Rainey, Moody, Brandon James.
Wow.
Wow.
You like that?
Well, because Moody gets so much mop-up time. I have Moody over Rainey. Can I just throw that in? I want that in on this podcast.
All right. No, you don't.
All right, then the next one is not exactly player by player, but who has more total touchdowns this year, Demps and Rainey combined, or UF's opponents?
Ooh, yeah. Opponents.
Demps and Rainey.
Neither is going to be very high. I'm going Demps and Rainey.
That would be 11 from last year.
Oh, absolutely, Demps and Rainey. Oh.
Rainey and Demps.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I've got them over
there. They'll significantly improve that, though.
I'm going to say
Defense is even better. Like, a defense...
I'm pretty sure the defense...
Single-digit touchdowns.
That's absolutely insane, not going to happen.
Okay.
Unbelievable.
Single-digit touchdowns.
Wow. All right, I'm going to say Demps and Rainey as well. Our next one is another one of those interesting, ridiculous ones. Who has more total touchdowns, Joe Hayden or Emmanuel Moody?
Emmanuel Moody.
Moody, for sure.
I'm going Hayden.
Nice.
I say Moody doesn't get in the end zone. Hayden has a pick six.
2-1, Moody.
Yeah, one, it might be 1-0, Hayden. Like, I don't.
I'll go like 4-0.
Huh. Okay. I'm gonna say Hayden actually because I feel like I feel like Moody won't get the goal line carries. I feel like that'll be Tebow. Maybe he'll get those end of the game like when Brantley's in. Yeah, mm-hmm. I suppose that is possible. Will. But I just want to make an outrageous prediction here. So I'll go Gallissly.
Gallissly will get those goal line carries and mop up.
All right. And then, let's see, I guess this is our last one here. Interceptions. Who finished with the most interceptions on the team? We got, just throw out some names. Hayden, Jenkins, Hill, Black, Wright. Start with McCall.
I'm taking Janoris.
Janoris?
Yeah. Janoris Jenkins.
Will Hill.
Hayden.
I'd say Hayden as well. Good pick, Phil. All right.
It's going to be Hill, then Janoris, by the
Who
way.
Who do you throw on? You normally have a corner you can kind of pick on with every team.
I mean, it was Wandy.
You just stop throwing. You just rush the ball for negative yards and just pack it in. And you punt. You have a good punter.
All right.
I don't know, man. The opponents are not going to have an easy time this year.
No, absolutely not.
They just take a knee. They're like, all right, we're done. Let's pack it in.
We don't want to embarrass ourselves.
Just punt right away.
We're just trying to strip rain to get to hell.
All right. And then to wrap this show up, we're going to do a final segment, our outrageous predictions for this year. McCall, you wanted to start?
Probably the least outrageous. That's why I want to go first.
Oh, okay.
I say Lorenzo Edwards has more touchdowns this year than Carl Moore.
Say that one more time.
What?
Lorenzo Edwards.
That's the least outrageous?
Lorenzo, I thought you guys were going like...
I'm going pretty outrageous, but I don't know.
Wait, say yours one more time.
Lorenzo Edwards scores on a scoop and score this year. Carl Moore only plays in 5 games and has no touchdowns.
Oh, that's not a, I'll top yours. Go ahead.
I don't know. Mine might be tame then. All right. Yeah. I say Jeff Demp scores a touchdown in every game in which he plays.
Wow. Oh, that's pretty outrageous. This is the best. I say the best for last. All right, I say.
You want me to
go first.
All right. I'm going
to
say Chris Rainey rushes for 1,000 yards.
That's, all right.
That's the most outrageous.
No. When I say this, I'm going to run out of the room so people don't throw things at me. The defense and special teams. No, we'll just go defense. Defense scores more touchdowns than one of Riley Cooper, Deontay Thompson, or David Nelson.
How is that outrageous?
I don't feel
at
like
all?
That's that outrageous, Phil.
What? That's the least outrageous thing I've ever heard.
How many receipts? They had 30 passing touchdowns last year.
Get some stats here.
This is the least outrageous thing I've ever heard.
You said than any one of?
Thompson, Cooper, and Nelson.
When you were setting that up, I thought you were going to say it, and this almost isn't outrageous. I'll say it right now. Their defense scores more touchdowns than they allow.
All right, that's totally outrageous.
No, yeah, no, absolutely. It's going to happen.
No.
This is going to really take
You just said that they won't allow single-digit touchdowns.
Right.
So they're going to score...
will score double-digit touchdowns.
15? What? Touchdowns?
No.
Oh my God. I would say defense and special teams.
All right, I don't
want to
make this prediction, but that's where I thought you were going.
Wait,
I
think if you don't count postseason, if you don't count SEC championship and, bowl game, that's not
outrageously. I thought we meant all games, though, I assume. All
right. I don't want to make that claim. I thought that's where you were going.
Okay.
But
that's fine.
Here's where I'm going to go. They score more non-offensive touchdowns than they give up defensive touchdowns. So special teams counts in there. That one I'll say.
That's reasonable.
I'll stick with that being totally insane.
All right. We'll see. I think that's going to be closer than you think.
I don't think that's too far out of line, but that's one that we'll come back to at the end of the
year.
I need
him to get like 4 tomorrow.
Yeah, we're going to have to stack up with these small games.
All right, well, that wraps it up for this. We've gone about 1 hour and 15 minutes here, so that's now about 4 hours of us in the last 3 days, so enjoy
that. You can never get enough.
Yeah.
Enjoy that.
Look, we will not be doing this every week, but we should be back to our usual probably Monday, Friday podcast schedule next week. Look forward to that. Send any feedback to sports@alligator.org.
Yes, make sure you pick up a copy of the first kickoff edition this week.
Yeah.
Got a pretty good cover. We redesigned the inside of the wrap. Got a great feature by Mike McCall over there. And pick it up. It's got all your game day information.
That's not a pretty good cover, Phil. That's a great cover.
It is a great cover. All black. Yeah, it's great.
Very professional looking. I'm a big fan. All right. And thanks for listening.